Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Tears of an Assassin by DJ Power is a nonstop thrill ride, a powerful tale of a young man's journey as he joins the Marine Corps in 1962 on a whim, trying to find out what he wanted to do with his life. He makes history by making the perfect shot at Paris Island, becoming the only Marine ever to accomplish this feat. This will unknowingly change his life in the Marines forever. DJ Power was born in a suburb of Boston, Massachusetts in 1943, held many titles throughout his life, businessman, entrepreneur, husband, father, grandfather, and the one that started him out in his various successes, the Marine. Dick joined the Marines in 1963, was on active duty for 8 years. He proudly served his country with 2 years of duty in the Republic of South Vietnam. From the Marines, Jim joined American Airlines, and before he retired, after 25 years, was Director of Special Services for the Western Division, based at LAX. He's now living in Southern California with his wife of 54 years. DJ Power, author of the compelling action-adventure historical fiction Tears of an Assassin, is our guest on This Week in America. Hello, DJ. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you for having me.
I love what you've done in this book, the story. I love the main character. Talk about, well, first of all, let's talk about what the inspiration for the book, and then we'll talk about this character who is flawed like all of us. I love the main character, but where did the idea for Tears of an Assassin come from?
Well, when you're in the Marines, or probably any service, but especially the Marines, when you have some downtime, whether it's in Vietnam or it's in Camp Lejeune or Camp Pendleton or wherever, you sit around with your buddies and you start telling stories, and they're called sea stories. And one guy will tell a story, and they're all true, but they're a little fabricated. They enhance the story. And we would do this, especially in Vietnam. Guys would come back from a mission or something, and they start talking about their mission, and I talk about my mission or whatever. And I kept, remembering these stories. And I came back to civilian life. And so people find out if you're in the Marine Corps that they love to talk to you, and they love to talk to you if you were in Vietnam. So I would start telling them some stories. And my wife had a friend down the end of the street here, and my wife would go to work, and we'd be standing outside, and I start telling the stories of what happened in Vietnam or what happened in the Marine Corps. And one day she said to me, you should write a book. And I said, I was so bad in English in high school and in college. If I did that, probably 12 teachers and professors would be turning over in their graves. So one day I was just bored. I had nothing to do, nothing on television. My grandchildren were in school and everything. So I sat down and I started to write a narrative, and I picked this character, Jim Coleman, based roughly on me in some things and other things. It's from the other sea stories and also a lot of fiction. And I just kept writing and writing and writing and writing, and I came up with 600 pages.
Wow.
And I hadn't finished. And I said, well, I wouldn't read a book of 600 pages, so I better cut it back. So we cut it back to 310 pages or so. And, Jim Coleman is a different kind of character that I really enjoy reading books. But he seems to be a different character because he's not a romantic. He's not political. He's just a young kid thrown into something that he never expected, did very well, and is very proud of what he did for his country.
With us on the program is DJ Power. He's the author of Tears of an Assassin. The book's available wherever books are sold. DJ's website is simple, djpowerauthor.us. If you go to our website, you can link on directly and get information. Book published and available at pageturner.us in their bookstore. Jim Coleman, as I mentioned, joined the Marine Corps on a whim, trying to figure out who he is, where he fits in, what life is going to be like. Was that your background in joining the Marine Corps? Did you do it intentionally, or was this a whim, trying to figure out who you were?
When I got out of high school, I didn't want to go to college. I didn't want to work. I just wanted to sit around and enjoy my time off. And after about a week or 10 days, my father, God bless him, said, "You better get a job." So my brother, who passed when he was 44, but he was very close to me, my best friend, he got me a job with a master sergeant in the National Guard that he was in the National Guard, Boston also. And one day we had this day worker, and he had just got out of the Marine Corps, just got back from Japan, and all he did all day is talk about the Marine Corps and talk about Japan and how wonderful that was. So as we were coming back to the office, I said, "Well, how do you join something like this?" And he said, "Just go to the post office. They're down below the post office in Quincy, and they'll sign you up." So I did, and that's how I ended up in the Marine Corps.
And the rest is history. The character Jim Coleman, loosely based on DJ. And let's talk about the character. As I mentioned, he's a human being. He's flawed. He's conflicted. He's really a fascinating character that you have created. Let's talk about that perfect shot that sort of changes everything, his trajectory in the Marine Corps. Talk about that, Paris Island, the perfect shot. And is there truth to that story?
Yeah, that is true. And what happened is when I went in, or Jim Coleman went into the Marine Corps, I always said I went to parochial high school taught by the Zavarian brothers. And the Zavarian brothers could teach the drill instructors some things. And so when I got down there, it was different. It was something out of the ordinary. You basically didn't have time to think. You didn't have time to say anything. It's strict discipline, but it's something that has changed my life and gave me new direction. But when we got to, you go 6 weeks, just harassment, learning about the Marine Corps, the history of the Marine Corps, learning about weapons, everything, dress, how you walk, how you march, how you speak. And up comes the rifle range. The rifle range is 3 weeks long. And the first week is what they call snap-in. You just practice the different positions, prone, sitting, laying down on the ground. And I had never fired a weapon in my life. I shot a BB gun, I think, once or twice. But my father said to me, "When you go down, remember, listen to everything they tell you and do what you're told." And that was my biggest problem through high school. I didn't like to take orders. And everybody looked at it and said, "Well, then why would you ever go in the Marine Corps?"
Yes.
I don't know. But I did. And this rifle instructor, his last name was Jennings, and he was from Arkansas. And he took a liking to me, and I took a liking to firing a weapon. And the first 2 days that we did actually fire at targets, I shot perfect. And I kept shooting perfect. And the day before qualifications, pre-qualification, and a buddy of mine right next to me wasn't going to qualify. And if you don't qualify in the range, you might as well not be a Marine, because you're going to be harassed forever. And this kid, FX, he was a real good guy. So the rifle instructor had me fire at his target and then at my target. And I fired, I hit a perfect five in his target. He pre-qualified, and I hit a perfect target in mine. And the next day, the exact same thing happened, and he qualified as I did. But the character, when we got out of boot camp at Paris Island, you go to Camp Lejeune in what they call infantry training regiment, and you're there for a month, and you basically are learning what the Marine Corps is about. You don't fire a weapon; you learn how to, go under wires. You learn how to you go into a gas. It's a you know, it's gas that you could smell.
And yes.
Yeah. And you learn how to use a gas mask, and they make you take the gas mask off, and then you have to talk to the drill instructors, who are wearing gas masks, by the way. And it's they look and see how long you can sustain being in that room with all that gas around before you run out. And it was something, it was a building exercise, but I didn't really realize what the Marine Corps was like until I came back from Vietnam. And, you know, the first couple of years, I walked the fine line. I did what I was just told, but I wasn't really a Marine. You know, it was just something else I was doing.
Yes.
But when I went to Vietnam, as soon as you get shot at once, you become a man. And when I came back from Vietnam, I realized what the history of the Marine Corps was, why it was so important, and how proud you are when you are a Marine.
And it all comes out in the book, Tears of an Assassin by DJ Power. And time is going by quickly, and I want to talk a little bit about the book, get people interested, but not giving away too much. The title is Tears of an Assassin. He is an assassin, and he's conflicted. He has maybe tears as well as he's trying to sort out what he's doing with his personal beliefs. Talk about the premise of the book very briefly, if you would, please.
Well, Jim Coleman was raised a Catholic, went through parochial schools, and ever since he could remember, from his mother and father, his teachers, his priest, and his confidants, the worst sin in the world is thou shalt not kill.
Yes.
And so he gets out of Camp Lejeune, and he's based at Headquarters Marine Corps in Washington, D.C. He's there for about a week, and he meets this commander, Forrest Damon, who is the liaison between the military services and the CIA. And he recruits Jim into the CIA and sits down, and he tells him what he's going to do. And all of a sudden, Jim says, well, isn't the worst sin thou shalt not kill? And the commander says, you're in a war. You do what you're told by the CIA or by the Marine Corps, and God won't hold anything against you. And all through the books that I've written, that comes up in his mind. He has some terrible dreams for what he has done, but he is a type of young man that his religion is number one, but his Marine Corps is number two. And he swore an oath to do what he was told, and to follow the orders of his superiors. And he does this. One thing I just want to bring up, Rick, is Tears of an Assassin is not a war book. It's not a shoot 'em up. It's a book that takes you through a man's mind and
yes.
how he accepts it.
I'm glad you pointed that out, because that is the case. We're there for the journey of what Jim goes through, and it has highs and lows. He thinks he reconciles himself with what he's told to do, yet he still struggles. The book is Tears of an Assassin, DJ Power. His website is djpowerauthor.us to find out about this book and other books he's written by going there. Let's talk about some of the experiences he has. There is one where I think it's his second assignment where he gets involved. I don't want to give away too much here, but it's after the assassination of JFK. You've got Cuba. You've got an organized crime family. The obvious question is, how much of that is based on truths, maybe things that you knew, or how much of it just your creative juices at play as you were telling that part of the story?
That's a nice way of saying BS.
I thought it was. Thank you.
yeah, it's both of those are my imagination.
Okay, well, it's very vivid imagination, and I love that part of the story. And again, it sort of it tells you what Jim is going through. Talk about your experiences for a second or so here in going to Vietnam at a young age. I'm sure it's reflected in the adjustment Jim is going through. How was it for you in going through that adjustment period?
Well, you know, it's. I remember Master Sergeant Mustaine. I was on a ship, and we were coming into Okinawa. And he said to me, he said, "Boy, this looks different from the last time I was here." And I said, "When was that?" He said, "1945." And I said to him, "Top," and that's what you call a Master Sergeant of the Marine Corps, Top. And I said, "Top, can you give me any kind of education that I should need when I go get to Vietnam?" And he said, "Yes, remember one thing. They're trying to kill you. This is not boot camp. This is not Camp Lejeune. We're not shooting 10 feet over your head." He said, have your head on a 360-degree swivel. Do what you're told. Keep your butt down, and you'll be all right." And I've lived that premise probably all my life, that, you know, you keep your butt down, have your head on a 360-degree swivel, and everything will turn all right.
It may not be live ammunition, but you've got incoming a lot in real life, don't you? So this is something that you've used through real life. Well, and let's talk about that. The career with American Airlines, an exceptional career with them. How did the Vietnam veteran role, how did that help you in getting the job? When you came back, it was pretty difficult for a lot of people to be accepted, to sort of get into the work environment. What was it like in American Airlines? How was that working for them?
Well, I looked at it this way. When the gate closes behind you in the Marine Corps, that's it. The Marine Corps is done. You'll always be a Marine. You'll always love the Marine Corps, but the physical and the mental part of being a Marine is finished once that gate closes. And I had terrific parents. My parents were the best in the world. And they knew what we were going through. They knew that we were not accepted by the general population. But the Boston, my father was a vice president of the Boston Edison Company. And I went to work for them for 7 years. And I loved it, but you always had the fools that say, "How many kids did you kill?" And how many did, you know?
Yes.
And it wore on us, and it wore on me. And I got a job at what we call function halls in Boston. They take care of big parties, weddings, all sorts of conventions. And I worked at the Lantana in Randolph, and I started greeting people, and I became a maitre d', and I was in charge of all the waitresses and waiters, but I dealt with the people who were booking the functions of the bride and the groom and their parents. And from there, I ran a country club, the Ritter Country Club in Whitman, Mass. And I ran into a guy that was delivering liquor, and his wife worked for American Airlines. And he talked to me for an hour. And after I got the job, his wife told me that he doesn't talk to anybody for more than a minute. and he says he really took a liking to you. And throughout, I started in reservations, answering phones. And to be honest with you, Rick, that was the best job I ever had in American Airlines. That was the most fun I ever had. Helping people with their vacations, yes, or their business meetings and things. But I came up with an idea, and Bob Crandall, who probably was the greatest CEO of any airline or any business in the world.
Oh, yes.
He was our chairman of the board. I mentioned this about putting together at four of our top airports, New York, Kennedy, LAX, Chicago, O'Hare, and Dallas-Fort Worth, and to meet the VIPs, not just celebrities, but VIPs, people that spend a lot of money, people that work with a lot of companies, and you treat them, you give them that little extra, you give them that these people are needed to make American Airlines survive. And he bought the premise, and we started special services. And fortunately, I work mostly with Kennedy because those were the big flights that the celebrities or the top travelers went to, and Chicago and Dallas, that's the same way. So we were working together, and it became so important to the other airlines that they tried to create their own special service departments. And I was pretty proud of that they would emulate and try to, and you know, that's the best form of respect, is when somebody tries to imitate what you're doing.
What a career of meeting people and using your personality and taking care of people. I love what you've done at that. And I wasn't sure with exactly special services, but it makes perfect sense. So much so the other airlines copied it at the time, which, yes, that is a compliment. Before we run out of time here, I want to ask you about what you hope the reader gets in reading Tears of an Assassin. It's a compelling character. He struggles all through the book and what he's doing and his background, his personal beliefs. It's a compelling story. It's a story it's going to be difficult to stop. When you finish a chapter, you're going to the next chapter and see what's going to happen here. What do you hope the takeaway is? What do you hope we get from Tears of an Assassin?
I want the people to realize that, you know, everybody that goes to war, whether it's Second World War, Korea, Vietnam, Afghanistan, Iraq, we're not bad people. We do a job that we're ordered to do. We do it to the best of our ability. Here's a young man that is struggling with his faith and his job. And I want you to see that there are human beings within the Marine Corps and other services that when you say thank you for your service, thank them. And when you see a Vietnam veteran, don't say thank you for your service, say welcome home, because back then we worked.
Yet never really officially got a welcome, did you? And I still don't understand why you, the soldier out there, was being held responsible for military and political decisions made by other people. It doesn't compute, but it's exactly what happened during that time period. What are you working on now? What book is next for you?
I am working on a fourth book with Jim Coleman, and the first part of the book is going to be about the Pentagon Papers.
Daniel Ellsberg, yes.
And what the Pentagon Papers were about, how the Congress dealt with it. Jim Coleman is called in to testify because the commander seems to think that they may have his name and what they did. And the second part of the book is going to be about how the Mountain Yard people are the mountain people in the Central Highlands of Vietnam. And without them, we probably wouldn't have done half what we did in Vietnam. They were our scouts. They were our mentors. They knew the territory, and they were real decent people, and the Viet Cong hated them. So we needed to get them out of the Central Highlands and back to Thailand, and hopefully back to the United States. And 1,200 actually did come back to North Carolina.
You know, that's fantastic. And we see so much about this as we were exiting Afghanistan. The question was, okay, what happens to all these people over there who were on our side, who risked their lives to help us? Now we're getting on a plane and they're not. They're having to stay here. So moral dilemmas you talk about in the new book, any idea when that will be out?
It probably will be out before the fall.
Oh, fantastic. As quickly as this year is going, it won't be long, and that will be.
But don't tell my publisher, because she'll be on me.
I'll make sure they don't get a copy of this interview, so there's no pressure on you to get that out. But all of this book and all of the other books written by DJ Power, our guest on the program, at his website, djpowerauthor.us. And I love the premise. Once again, loved them for the other books, love them for the new book, and can't wait to talk about that as well. Talk about moral situations you find yourself in with the people that have helped you, what's going to happen to them, and the Pentagon Papers. Part of me is saying they should be released. That's going to help the country. The other part is saying we can't do that. So I can't wait to see how you handle that. DJ, it's been such a pleasure having you on the program and talking about the book Tears of an Assassin. Looking forward to having you back with us, and thank you for spending some time with us today.
Thank you so much, Rick. I really appreciate it, and good luck to everybody.
It has been our pleasure to have you with us on the program. The book is Tears of an Assassin, DJ Power. His website is djpowerauthor.us. Book available, pageturner.us, in their bookstore. They're the publisher. Of course, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold. And you can also order it at his website, djpowerauthor.us. All of that on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And we are back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.